Hello, it is September 8th, 2015. You are looking live at Athens, Georgia. This is episode 526 of the Will Leach Experience Podcast on Sports on Earth. I am the aforementioned Will Leach, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. I hope everyone had a wonderful Labor Day weekend. I went to a ton of sporting events. I went to Georgia State, Charlotte at the Georgia Dome, Georgia, Louisiana, Monroe at Sanford Stadium, and Greenville Drive, Savannah, Nat Ants, Sand Ants, Sand Gnats, Minor League Baseball at Fleur Field in the West End in Greenville, South Carolina. Very active weekend of sports with me and my three-year-old son. William is very tired. He's sleeping right now. That's what I should be doing. No, that's not what I should be doing. I should be talking to Lindsey Jones, the national NFL reporter for USA Today. This is our big NFL preview edition. We are back. It returns on Thursday. The moral quandaries and gymnastics that we all have to do with ourselves to tell ourselves that we can still like this sport. That begins Thursday. So that'll be fun. So Lindsey is one of the best NFL reporters I know and knows her stuff as well as anyone. So she's going to preview the NFL for me because Lindsey Jones is awesome. So this is where I remind you, by the way, to please review the podcast on iTunes. Give us a review, say nice things, whatever. And please let me know if the sound sounds bad. We're working on that. Anyway, okay, here's Lindsey. NFL preview, it's NFL week. Hope you had a great Labor Day. All right, hello, Lindsey Jones. Thank you for coming on and being my NFL preview person. Are you prepared for this unique challenge?
I hope so. I hope I'm better prepared for this than I am for trivia, I'll do my best.
You're going to do fine. And again, I feel like anyone that was able to survive a flight to Sochi with me drugged, confused, and talking to Joe Buck, I figure you are capable to handle anything.
I always forget about the fact that we saw Joe Buck in the Amsterdam airport.
Yeah,
and all of the other crazy things that happened on that trip.
Yes, everyone forgets now. Everyone's just kind of forgotten that all of our friends and neighbors were telling us not to go because we were going to die. And like everyone's just forgotten that about that from Sochi because nothing happened. You know, like there's a guy from the Defense Department going on television saying, I wouldn't send my kids. Hey, but good luck, Americans.
Exactly.
And everyone's forgotten that. So I was drugged up from the flight and didn't get off the plane. And there was Joe Buck. And I'm still not convinced that actually happened. Anyway, so we are going to preview the NFL. I have a couple of general things I kind of want to pick your brain about before we get going. One of the things that I always do every NFL season, and listen, you do this, the NFL is one of the things I write about. The NFL is your primary thing to write about. You are a very intelligent person and a kind-hearted soul. And so I wonder if you, being closer to it than I, have the same thing that we do every year. Where, like, I feel like I can't wait for football to start, but I also know that, like, oh, this is the time where I do all of my moral gymnastics every year and make sure that, like it's always kind of this weird thing of, well, it's so exciting, Thursday night's going to be so great. Please don't, brain, remember all of the things that are really bad about football in the NFL when I get really excited about this.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's increased over the last few years for me. Probably as I get older and get a little bit more cynical, you know more things and you see more guys get injured, and especially the guys that have suffered multiple concussions, and you kind of just look at things differently. And then last year was just such an unusual year in the NFL when it came to all the off-field stuff. And I feel like I spent just about as much time last year writing about lawsuits and arrests and domestic violence education programs and all of that stuff as I did actual football. So that, you know, that whole stuff has also creeped into, the NFL as a moral organization and Roger Goodell and his job status and deflated footballs and players beating up their girlfriends. And it's just, it's hard to, you know, sometimes just focus on the games. And I'm even having a little bit of a hard time wrapping my head around that there's going to be an actual game that matters this week. Yeah. And lots of games that matters, but one really big one here on Thursday night.
I have to say, and this is the last thing before we get into the actual previews. I've been very, I started out being proud of myself for not writing about Deflategate. And then I became slowly embarrassed by the fact that I wasn't doing it. Cause I thought it was going away. From the very beginning, I thought this is literally the stupidest story I've ever been involved in sports. We're talking about the air in footballs as if people act like the Patriots cheating as if you know, as if they figured out a way to make their score, their touchdowns worth 18 points and everyone else's worth three. You know, we were talking about air and footballs. It was completely baffling. I have to say, as the story went along, it ultimately, and I think we saw with the last week of the decision of it, it really became, I now realize the importance of the story, which has nothing to do with footballs and nothing to do with Tom Brady. To me, it feels like a definitive, wow, Goodell really screwed up story.
Yes, absolutely. Because there have been a lot of instances over the couple of years where the NFL Players Union or Players Association, excuse me, has been very angry with the league and Goodell, especially about the way he handles discipline and the fact that there is not a neutral arbitrator. But it took such a ridiculous case, and it took a case involving very obvious, I think, to most people, except for, you know, maybe the most diehard Patriot haters out there, that this punishment did not fit the crime. I mean, it took such a ridiculous situation, and one of probably the two or three most high profile famous players in the league for this thing to really reach ahead, where now I think there's actually going to be changes. Owners are going to have to talk about changing the way that Roger Goodell handles discipline. The union has won a couple times. I mean, they won in court with Greg Hardy. They won in court with Ray Rice. But winning this decision with Tom Brady, when it was strictly based on process and the arbitration and the rules and Goodell's kind of heavy-handed authority, it was huge. And I think we're actually going to see some changes coming from this when it comes to the CBA, who is the arbitrator in these situations. If we don't see that sort of change, I'll be really surprised, and players will be really, 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 really unhappy. But I think now we're finally at a point where I think even the owners who have been in the past so supportive of Roger Goodell are going to realize this can't happen again, this sort of embarrassing situation where we keep losing in court and the boss of our league is embarrassed. I think owners are going to have to. And if owners put the pressure on Goodell to do this, then it will change.
Yeah, and it's just bizarre that last year, the massive seriousness of those stories and the weird way that he responded to it, it felt like he doubled down on it. Like, it felt like, I remember that New Yorker cover that, like, seemed to, like, the takeaway from all of this, the New Yorker cover seemed to imply, wow, the NFL, it's, they look at all, like, the criminals they have in that league. And I'm like, no, that's not the takeaway from this. That's not really what the story is. And it's weird that the thing that actually causes the change is this dumb Tom Brady story.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so we're going to go division by division and pick, and we're just going to do 5 minutes so you're not here all day and everyone, it's a big NFL podcast, but it's not that big of an NFL podcast. People do like hours on each division. So we're just going to do 5 minutes on each one. And because I like to assume that listeners start listening on the East Coast earlier, we're going to get them first at the end of the podcast because of the time change. We'll get the West Division. It totally makes sense to do your podcast scheduling by time zone. That is an actual thing that makes a lot of sense. So let's start with the AFC East. 5 minutes on the clock. When you look at the AFC East, I kind of felt like even if the four-game suspension would have kept up, this was the Patriots to lose. Now it feels like they actually have like a little kind of fire this year that they might not have even had coming into the season had this not happened.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think they had some significant questions with the Patriots, but mostly on defense, especially their secondary after they lost Darrelle Revis and Brandon Browner in the offseason. You know, their best cornerback right now is Malcolm Butler, a guy who absolutely nobody had heard of until the final minute of the Super Bowl. And now he's going to be counted on basically to be their best cornerback. I mean, that's a really big jump going from Darrelle Revis and Brandon Browner to the Super Bowl hero who made one ridiculously amazing play and nothing else that anybody knows about. So there's definitely some questions that I have about the Patriots when it comes to their defense. But I just have this feeling that Tom Brady is going to go out there and just tear up the NFL this year, because after Spygate, they went out and did that. Give this guy a chip, give this guy any extra reason to be fired up. I feel bad for the Steelers, honestly. I think it's going to be rough. And I've talked to a lot of the Steelers defensive players over the last few days for a story I'm working on. And it seems like they're in such a transition right now. And I just, I think they're walking into a buzzsaw on Thursday night against the Patriots, because I think Brady's still going to do Brady things. Gronk, if he's healthy all year, that's a problem for everybody. That's especially a problem for the AFC East. And I remember texting with some of my coworkers where I was just, You know, I'm already a little depressed about the inevitable, like, Patriots win the AFC or Patriots in the Super Bowl, because we've written those stories a lot of times, and, you know, sometimes chaos and having new teams stirring things up, and it's just, all right, well, this is kind of where it's going, it seems like.
Wow, at least there'll be plenty of Gronk meme things to fill in the time during that. The rest of this division, I want to get excited about the Bills, and I have to say the most exciting thing about the Bills for me, I loved that they picked Tyrod Taylor. Like, for some reason, that felt like, okay, there's something more interesting and potentially more dangerous about them now than maybe before they made that decision.
Yeah, I mean, I 100% agree that I'm glad they went with Tyrod Taylor. I mean, I think EJ Manuel has had a couple years. Granted, they weren't with this coaching staff, but I think we kind of know who he is now. And Matt Cassel is Matt Cassel. I think if he was going to be their guy, they would have named him the starter in May or June or the first week of August. And the fact that he was not doing anything to separate himself from Tyrod Taylor and then EJ Manuel, that really said a lot to me. So I think that's going to be really interesting. I wish they had a better quarterback situation, though, because... Yeah, And I wish I had confidence that Rex Ryan knew how to handle this sort of quarterback situation. There's nothing in his track record as a head coach that says, yes, this is a guy who knows how to coach quarterbacks and knows how to handle a messed up quarterback situation well. So I think their defense is going to be really good. Their front seven is really scary. It'll be interesting to see this, you know, run heavy LeSean McCoy kind of offense. But the NFL is really so simple. Unfortunately, it comes down to if you have a quarterback or not. And look, I'd love to be wrong about Tyrod Taylor and him go out there and be the kind of breakout player of 2015. But it just seems like he would have to come a long way, I think, to be that guy and to get the Bills to make up that much ground on the Patriots.
And speaking of these quarterback problems, there are the Jets.
The Jets. Do you think the Jets must be so happy about everything that's happening in Washington?
Because they're
just like, thank you. Thank you, RG3, for taking away, for us to not be the most dysfunctional quarterback situation in the NFL. Because, I mean, isn't that this just the most Jets thing ever to happen?
And it's a shame because I feel like, you know, I watched Bowles with Arizona, his defensive coordinator. He's a totally smart guy. It feels like he's the stable guy. Like, he is a straight and narrow. He's the opposite of Rex Ryan, in so many ways. And it feels like he is the guy that keeps the locker room under control. And then this thing happens, and now there we are with the LOL Jets thing again.
And I think he's handled it as well as possible as well. I don't really look at anything that Todd Bowles has done wrong in this situation. I mean, these were the quarterbacks that he was given, and their new general manager. This is just where they're at, and you kind of have to make the best of that situation. But, you know, maybe Ryan Fitzpatrick will be fine. You know, maybe he'll be fine. But I don't know. I know Brandon Marshall enough from having covered him for a lot of years in Denver and in Chicago, and know Eric Decker from covering him in Denver. And these are two guys who, they'll say the right things. Well, Eric Decker will say the right things, but God, you just got to get somebody to get them the ball. And I don't know. I'm not super excited about the Jets other than watching whatever the next dumpster fire might be.
That's always exciting. And then we wrap up this division with Miami. And one thing that's interesting is they're the Patriots, who are, of course, the Patriots. The Bills and the Jets, who are both starting with these new regimes and seem like, you know, no one's getting fired after 1 year there. It feels like the team that maybe has the most on the line this particular season is Miami.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, Joe Philbin, this is his fourth year, I believe. You know, he kind of miraculously kept his job last year. Or going into the 2014 season after that big, you know, locker room bullying scandal. And they've spent a lot of money. They've invested back in quarterback Ryan Tannehill again. They spent a gazillion dollars on Ndamukong Suh. They have really good defensive pieces there. This is a year that I don't want to say they have to make the playoffs or Joe Philbin is absolutely fired and they blow this thing up, but it kind of feels like it's that kind of situation. I did see them in training camp. I've watched a bunch of their preseason games. They've been one of the most impressive teams in the preseason. So we can take that for what it's worth. It's preseason. But I was actually, before the Deflategate ruling came back last week with Tom Brady, I was actually about, we had a chance to kind of reset our picks and if we wanted to change which playoff teams, division winners. I mean, I had almost talked myself into picking the Dolphins to win the AFC East. I rethought it. I didn't. I still think that they can be a wild card team, because I just thought they looked that good in the preseason. I could definitely be wrong. They could. It could just all implode. But I think Tannehill is going to be better, and I think Ndamukong Suh is going to make a big difference to that front seven. I mean, he's not going to go out there necessarily and get 15 sacks, but he might enable the rest of those guys around him, especially Cam Wake, who's going to line up right next to him on the defensive line, to have a monster year at getting after the quarterback.
So where did you ultimately land? Did you land with New England?
I did.
Do you have Miami as a wild card or no?
I did, although if people are looking at this, I think one set of our thing that I wasn't able to make any changes to, I did not have them in the playoffs. But the last chance that I had to submit picks, I put them in, I think, in our preview issue that'll be out on Thursday.
Listen,
I think I have Miami as a wild card.
This is canon, okay? The former predictions in previous incarnations are not canon. This is the canon prediction. So Miami in the playoffs and held for, so pay, when you read the preview edition, when you read USA's preview edition and you see Lindsey Jones picks, if any of them are different than here, just know that she was lying then and she is telling the truth now.
Totally.
Okay. So now we go to the NFC East. We went a little over 5 minutes. That's good. That means you have to that's okay, because you're doing awesome, telling very great things.
I'll try to keep it short.
No, I'm actually more worried about you. I will talk about this for days. I just, like, you know, you have like actual other, like, important things to do. So
that's cool. My husband's cooking dinner out in the kitchen, so I'm good. I'm off the hook.
All right, sweet. Well, in that case, is he slow roasting? We have like 3 hours. No, we don't do 3 hours. Philadelphia, NFC East. We start in Philadelphia. It's sad. Tebow's not around. It's a shame. But to me, look at it feels like eventually, like, Kelly has kind of taken such big risks and, like, these big, huge statement things. It feels like they have to do well this year, or, like, the whole he's a crazy, mad genius guy is going to kind of go away.
Yeah, I just don't really feel like this is the team that's going to go 8-8. I feel like this is a team is going to go, like, 13-3 or 3-13.
Right.
You know, like, it's either going to fail spectacularly or it's going to be awesome and we're all going to have to kind of tip our cap to Chip Kelly, the genius, for seeing things in Sam Bradford that we thought were gone forever and all these other sorts of things, but, you know, getting rid of some star players and all that stuff. So I'm very curious. I mean, they're one of the teams that I have the hardest time pinning down exactly how they're going to be, mostly because Chip Kelly just doesn't reveal much. I mean, we can kind of watch the evolution of this offense, and we don't know what Sam Bradford's going to be like, how long he's going to keep his ACLs intact, if he's going to make it 16 games. I mean, I would love nothing more for that to happen. I mean, for him to be, you know, week 17, I'm sitting here with my, you know, AP ballot, and I can write Sam Bradford's name in for Comeback Player of the Year. That would be fantastic. That'd be a great story for the NFL, great for him. It's hard to envision that. And part of that, my husband is from St. Louis, and he kind of suffered through the Rams stuff. And, you know, he doesn't believe that Sam Bradford is going to make it there in Philadelphia. But I'm a little more optimistic. So we'll see. I mean, Chip has very much kind of pushed all of his chips in on the whole I am the smartest man in the NFL. And you guys can second guess me all you want, but this is what I'm doing. And We'll see. You know, he's either going to be the ultimate genius or he's going to have a really interesting offseason next year, I guess we could say.
When you look at, like, Dallas, it's funny. It wasn't that long ago that Dallas was considered a dysfunctional, potentially dysfunctional organization on the level of a Washington or an Oakland or so on. And now all of a sudden, like, when they finally kind of shifted away, Jerry Jones didn't just get to do everything by fiat anymore.
Right.
They feel like all of a sudden have become... To me, you look at this team top to bottom, there are some issues, particularly running back, but they are really seem like kind of stacked in, like, a lot of different ways.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they definitely have done a good job building some depth on places of the roster, mostly on the offensive line. I mean, I think it's a really good lesson for, God, it's crazy that I'm saying, like, citing the Joneses for, like, a great lesson in building a football team.
Right.
But they just kept investing first-round pick after first-round pick in offensive linemen, and look what happened last year. Tony Romo had... probably his best season of his career a season that he'd missed the entire off season because of neck surgery, or back surgery, excuse me. And, you know, you didn't expect that he was going to have that kind of year coming off of the off season that he had, but he was able to do that because of that offensive line and because of DeMarco Murray. That said, I think they're going to regret not doing more for the running back core. I mean, I know they traded for Christian Michael from Seattle earlier this week, but I mean, I don't think you were, this is the answer. This is the next DeMarco Murray. I think that's, you know, maybe a little far-fetched. I think they're going to regret not drafting TJ Yeldon or Amir Abdullah or any of these guys that you could have gotten in the second and third round, as opposed to kind of just go and saying, we're going to ride with Joseph Randall and Darren McFadden. I think that's a really, really, really big risk that might end up biting them here. The other thing with Dallas is that they do have a couple really important players that are going to be suspended early in the year. Greg Hardy, who's their best pass rusher, and linebacker Rolando McClain, who was a really good candidate for comeback player of the year last year. So having two really talented guys like that away at the start of the year, I think that is going to be an issue for them as well. So if they can hang on, let these running backs kind of get settled, maybe figure it out, you know, wait until you get some sort of semblance of a pass rush together, you know, come October, you know, maybe they'll be all right. I still picked them to win the NFC East. I don't feel very confident about it. But I think I picked them mostly because of confidence in Romo. And I know people like to hate on Tony Romo, but if you're looking at the NFC East, I'll take him right now, basically any day of the week.
And then we go to the Giants. You know, it's funny. If you take, obviously, it's very easy to say, hey, take away those Super Bowl wins. Super Bowl wins are pretty awesome. But certainly it is, you know, it feels like if they don't make a run this year, if they somehow miss the playoffs this year, it feels like as much as this organization hates change, it feels like they'll have to make a change.
Right. I mean, and Tom Coughlin is, you know, he's beloved there, you know, with ownership and all that stuff. But he's, you know, at some point a message becomes stale and it just isn't working anymore. And he is one of the older coaches in the league. You know, and Eli does not have a new contract yet. So that could get really interesting. Like, do you franchise tag Eli Manning next year? You know, I guess he's probably 34, or he's about to be 34, or he'll be 34 next year. And do you franchise tag a 34-year-old quarterback? Or do you let him go and blow that up? I mean, it is a really interesting proposition for what might happen there. They also had an interesting offseason with all the Jason Pierre-Paul stuff that they had going on, when, if he'll ever be able to play. And, you know, for all of the heroics that Eli Manning had in those Super Bowl wins, the reason they won those Super Bowls against the Patriots was because of their defense and their pass rush. And that stuff has all kind of just really fallen apart, and they have not really had much of a semblance of a defense. They have had major injuries. There may be more snake bit when it comes to injuries than any other team, but it just seems like they're a team that their arrow is still not pointing up. I don't know if it's pointing down anymore, but I don't see them as a team that's ascending at all.
And we finish up with Washington.
Oh, Washington. Do you have a sad trombone drop we can use?
I actually feel like it's worth considering of maybe just making sad trombone the new nickname. I think that would just be easier for everyone.
It'd be fine. I'm down with that.
I would be very comfortable with that, too. It would certainly make it less confusing to write because I don't use the nickname. When you look at it's funny. I was looking through all the preview magazines and all the, you know, the off-season stuff, and the centerpiece of all of it was, listen, they're really counting on RG3 to take this step, to rebound and take another step forward this year. And now that's blown up and all these places. This just looks like a franchise in total, complete chaos, disarray, really from kind of top to bottom.
Yes, absolutely. And that's taking out the fact that, like, we had a bizarre thing with the general manager's wife and Twitter last week where, I mean, that was just a ridiculous thing. But yes, I mean, so much weird stuff that's going on there with that quarterback situation, the entire way it's been handled with the concussion protocol. I thought it was really fishy that he was cleared to return to practice as quickly as he was, the way they diagnosed that return to practice. And I mean, my initial take on it was like, good on that doctor for reexamining everything and saying, you know what? No, he's not okay to play. Even if he ultimately ended up coming under fire for that from the organization, or if there was at odds, if he could was going to continue or resigning or whatever the exact facts of that might have been. But it really worked out to be a convenient excuse, I think, for Jay Gruden to do what he had wanted to do all along. RG3 was not his guy, doesn't play the type of, can't run the system that he likes to run. So that leads you back to, why do you hire a head coach who's an offensive head coach who runs this kind of offense? And we have this franchise quarterback that ownership loves so much. It just, it looked like it was built to fail, and it blew up maybe even sooner than any of us were expecting it to. Kirk Cousins is a very nice guy, a good leader, locker room guy, all that kind of stuff. I liked watching him at Michigan State, but, you know, I read all this stuff, these coaches, you know, Mike Shanahan just espousing about how fantastic he is. And I'm like, really? I mean, what? If he was that great, and if as many personnel people and coaches saw this out of Kirk Cousins before, he wouldn't have been drafted as a backup. People would have been clamoring to try to trade for him, and he would have played a hell of a lot better in the chances that he got. You know, I think that just the fact that he's not RG3 is really why they picked him to be the guy. So it's hard to envision a way that this goes well for Washington, that all of a sudden, oh, you're right, Kirk Cousins, he was our guy. Like, that was a fantastic move, Jay Gruden. I'd be shocked, just absolutely shocked, if that ultimately ends up happening and that they're not in the position to draft a new quarterback very high in the draft next year.
It couldn't happen to a nicer bunch of people. All right, we go to the AFC North. I'm not going to ask if Joe Flacco's elite. I'm just not. By the way, you didn't have any NFC East teams as a wild card, did you? Was it just Dallas?
No, I actually think I had Dallas and Philadelphia.
Philadelphia, okay. So I'm writing that down. Philadelphia is a wild card pick. Okay. All right, so we go to the AFC North. When you look at Baltimore, you know, this is make that kind of that fun game. Will you be covering their game in Denver? Will you be at that game?
I will.
Okay.
So that's a really good one for week one. I think we're going to learn a lot about the Broncos, and I think we'll learn a lot about the Ravens, who are a very kind of chic preseason pick. I know the Sports Illustrated folks are really high on the Ravens. I've got some questions about how Mark Trestman and that Joe Flacco offense is going to work. Obviously, Joe Flacco had a really good year last year with Gary Kubiak as his coordinator. So there'll be some changes here with Mark Trestman, just to see how that works. But I think people are high on the Ravens again for the reason that people were high on the Ravens back when they won their Super Bowl a couple of years ago. And it was because of their defense and their pass rush and their line, you know, the changes that they've made there and the development of some of their young players. So I'm very much looking forward to seeing that game on Sunday, week one here in Denver. Mostly because I want to watch Terrell Suggs and Elvis Dumervil and what sort of havoc they can wreak against the Broncos' offensive line that's a little shaky. And if they can come in and beat Denver at Denver week one, when Peyton Manning usually plays really well early in the season, I think that will be a major tone setter for their season. It'll be a sign to the rest of the AFC that, yes, this is a legit team that not only should they be the favorites to win the AFC North, they might actually be a favorite to win the AFC as well.
You mentioned earlier how you were concerned for Pittsburgh going into that first game with New England. How do you feel about Pittsburgh the whole season? Their offense seemed to take this kind of good step forward last year, kind of coming together. They've got a lot of talent receiving-wise. But how are they in general? Are they too much offense, not enough defense?
Yeah, I think that might be the case. I mean, they're still pretty young on defense, still pretty unproven. A lot of the people and the faces that we've associated with the Steelers for so long, you know, Dick LeBeau, Troy Polamalu, even like Ike Taylor in their secondary. I mean, those guys are gone now. They have a new defensive coordinator who, he didn't bring in a new scheme. He was their linebackers coach before Keith Butler. So a lot of the stuff is the same. I mean, they're running the same defense there, but it's just a lot of new guys. I think their defense will be better than it was last year. I think it'll be better than we saw at times in the preseason because they have some really young guys that they're trying to figure out. You know, if I'm a Steelers fan, I'm encouraged by the fact that their front office has gone ahead and invested in the front seven They knew that they had to get younger and faster. A couple of years ago, they were just a really slow and old defense. Ryan Shazier, their inside linebacker, he's healthy now. He bulked up a little bit. I think he's going to be a really intriguing guy to watch. He might be one of the fastest inside linebackers, if not the fastest in the league. So it allows them to do a lot of stuff with kind of run coverage and pass coverage. That said, I think it might take a while. I think they're going to have their lumps that come. And I think that the first of those lumps might come against the Steelers, come against the Patriots, excuse me, on Thursday night.
One of the great statistics, it's not just factoids, really. I can't believe that Cincinnati has made the playoffs 4 years in a row out of this division. Like, that's really kind of amazing when you think of this as one of the toughest divisions in football. Since, and they still haven't won a single playoff game out of it. Is this the year? Are we going to see this again? Are they just going to make a wild card and lose again? Or are they going to take a step forward or backwards?
Yeah, I think the general expectation, and certainly my sense of it, is that they don't seem to be a team that's going to make a big jump this year. You don't look at them and say, oh, they've gotten better. They've done a lot of things to improve. Like, is anybody really confident that Andy Dalton is going to be any different in year, what is this, five now for him, than he was last year, that all of a sudden he's figured out how to play in these kind of primetime, big, high-pressure games? You know, it just doesn't seem like that's something that you can just fix immediately. And it is really crazy because he's a good quarterback, and good quarterbacks are so hard to find in the NFL. And I think there's a lot of teams that would, you know, be doing backflips if they could get Andy Dalton right now to be their quarterback compared to whoever it is they have right now, you know, New York Jets or whatever the case might be. But there's just still that sense that, like, when you really need him, is he your guy? And he has done nothing so far to prove that he is that guy. And I'm not sure if the rest of the team around him is good enough to all of a sudden, this is the year that they're going to win a playoff game. I didn't pick them to make the playoffs this year. I think I'm probably not alone. I'm not alone in that. And it'll be interesting if they do miss the playoffs, and if they do miss the playoffs, how they miss it. Do they miss the playoffs by going 6-10, 4-12? Do they miss it by going, you know, 11-5 and losing out on a wild card to the Steelers or something like that, then maybe it's a different situation for Marvin Lewis. But yeah, you kind of just have to wonder, like, how is this guy? They haven't won a playoff game.
Right.
Most coaches, look, we saw two teams last year that their coaching staffs got blown up after they won. I mean, the Niners and the Broncos, where they were very recently in the Super Bowl, and very recently were having back-to-back seasons where they were winning double-digit games. And that all got blown up, yet Marvin Lewis has not won a playoff game, whatever.
Yeah, no. I mean, yeah.
So it's just crazy.
We have Cleveland. A year ago at this time, I had a cover story in the USA Weekend. As a matter of fact, in the USA Today Weekend, the Weekend magazine, talking about how my hope that Johnny Manziel could change the NFL. And I don't think he did.
No, I don't think so. If anything, though, I hope maybe the story is, can Johnny Manziel change himself?
Right.
And change the perception of him and actually change his life, where, you know, this is more than just 2015 for him. This is the rest of his life and what sort of functioning adult and productive member of society can he be?
And all preseason stuff's been good, right? Like,
it seems like it. I mean, we don't have any evidence otherwise, right, of, you know, except for he has had the issue with his shoulder or his elbow where he had to stop throwing for a couple weeks, which is troubling when you have a guy as young as him that is having elbow soreness. I don't know if that's something that leads back to the fact that he played baseball for so long and if there's just some weird stuff going in on there. That he hasn't had surgery, but it is troubling that this is a guy who, after one season where he didn't play and then one full off season in the NFL, he's already having elbow issues significant enough that he has to take 2 weeks off from throwing.
All right. So when you look at this division, you don't have Cincinnati. Obviously, you don't have Cleveland in there. Do you have another wild card coming out here? And if not, or if do, who wins?
I don't. I just have the Ravens.
Okay.
I have the Ravens going to the AFC Championship game.
Okay. Oh, don't. Spoiler.
Oh, sorry.
Spoiler. I know, of course. That's of course totally fine. All right, so you have Baltimore in. All right, now
we won't spoil anything further.
It's okay. Please, please. I'm sure people just shut it off. They're like, forget it. Why are we listening now?
So, and also, I'm terrible at betting, so don't take my advice to go bet in Las Vegas unless you want to lose your money.
Don't just bet on anything, people. You can't win. That's why the casinos are huge. Anyway, sorry, I'm an anti-gambling advocate. I'm like the Kerry Nation of, like, I hate gambling. all right, so we go to the NFC North. The Packers, to me, look like, I mean, frankly, this is a team that should have made the Super Bowl last year.
Yes.
And so it feels like they are primed to be able to potentially do that this year.
Yes, absolutely. They were an onside kick, a messed up onside kick away from being in the Super Bowl last year. And I think they're in a position where they can, if they have to play Seattle in the playoffs again this year, maybe that game can happen in Lambeau, which I think would be very advantageous for the Packers. Yes, losing Jordy Nelson hurts. That's a big deal. He's, you know, we hear the next man up thing so often, and then there's a certain cases where it doesn't apply. And Jordy Nelson to the Packers, it just doesn't apply. But they do have some good young guys there. I think Randall Cobb is going to be really, really productive. I think it's Davante Adams, their second-year guy, was kind of the standout guy in camp, who everybody's really high on. And then Eddie Lacy really had a breakout year last year. And if they can build on that, then that's just going to make Aaron Rodgers all the more dangerous. I really like the Packers. I don't think the other teams in that division are all that close to them. I know there's reason for optimism with Minnesota and probably with Detroit as well. But that said, I just think there's only a couple really elite teams in the NFL, and the Packers are definitely one of them.
Yes, and they had an offseason that made me happy because they were great in Pitch Perfect 2. They might have been the best part of Pitch Perfect
2. Oh, I was – can we go off script?
Of course. Go.
I was so excited. So Pitch Perfect 1 is one of my, like, all-time favorite movies. Yeah. My husband is so embarrassed about this.
It's awesome.
I love it. Yeah. I watched it twice on the flight home from Sochi. It was playing on, like, Delta, and I was like, all right, I'm just going to watch it again. No shame. But I went with one of my girlfriends to see Pitch Perfect 2, and I went either the opening weekend or fairly soon after it opened, and I don't know if the other people in the theater, like, didn't realize that they were all Green Bay Packers. I think people knew, like, okay, that's Clay Matthews, you know, the hair, the whole thing. But I was just so excited about, like, David Bakhtiari, the guards and the line. I mean, it was so great. I mean, I was laughing so loud. I mean, it was one of those, like, just amazing moments. And I don't get to Green Bay that often, just geographically, the way we cover the team. But I will probably nerd out and want to just talk Pitch Perfect with them if I ever get there, and that's going to be really embarrassing.
That scene may have been made specifically for you.
They probably did. I mean, it was really limited. Like, the crossover of, like, NFL nerds and Pitch Perfect nerds is really small. And, yeah, it's basically me. So thank you, Pitch Perfect, for doing that for me.
Thank you, Elizabeth Banks. That was very nice of her. And then also, I love that Aaron Rodgers was really good on Jeopardy. That made me really happy. I was glad that he did so well in Celebrity Jeopardy.
And he's really good on, like, Instagram with Olivia Munn.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He had, like, a funny thing.
I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, they're definitely, like, sorry, Tom and Giselle, they are definitely my favorite quarterback celebrity couple. By far.
Each of them actually has a personality, so that helps.
All right. She's amazing.
Yeah, so that's what I mean. Like, no offense to Giselle and Tom Brady, but, like, you know, they don't maybe have such a personality. Anyway, we go to the Vikings. People are very excited about the Vikings. I wonder if they're maybe a year early being excited by the Vikings, but, you know, Bridgewater is, he feels like the cool, he's like the hipster fun quarterback this year. It feels like he made a nice little step forward. He feels like someone that people are really getting behind and a good point to this franchise. It still feels to me like maybe they're a year away.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I think it's hard to project because we saw rookie Teddy Bridgewater last year, where most rookies are going to have some issues and growing pains. And I think he exceeded most expectations. But the version of Teddy Bridgewater that we saw last year was Teddy without Adrian Peterson. So now we throw Adrian Peterson back into this offense, and I think it's going to make Teddy Bridgewater a lot better, a lot more confident, a lot more comfortable. It's going to kind of really change the entire complexion of that offense and what they want to do. They've got some nice young defensive pieces. Their guys they drafted last year, I think Aaron Barr, sorry, I'm blanking on names now. Barr, and then Eric Kendricks, the linebacker they drafted this year out of UCLA. People have been really high on him as well. So, you know, I think there's definitely interesting stuff going on in Minnesota. I'm not sure if I'm confident enough in them to say that this is a team that's going to make the playoffs. They're going to make that kind of jump. It's really tough also playing in that division with Green Bay. I think it's kind of like when we were talking about the AFC East, where teams can improve a lot, but when you have a really elite team also in your division, it's just hard to make up that much ground and really be considered a playoff contender right away. And that might be where the Vikings are at right now, unless Teddy Bridgewater is once again going to make a giant step and exceed more of our expectations.
It's weird. Detroit won 11 games last year.
Yeah.
I didn't quite realize that. Obviously, losing Sue has worried some people. How do you feel about Detroit?
Yeah, I mean, I would say if there's one team in that division, like maybe Detroit would take a step back while Minnesota would take a step forward. But look, I mean, Detroit, they have a quarterback. I mean, people might not love Matthew Stafford. You might not list him right off the top of your head when you're thinking of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. But would you rather have Matthew Stafford or Andy Dalton? Give me Stafford, right. Any day right now. So, you know, I think they've got a quarterback. They've got some really good receivers. They've got a pretty good running game. They've got some defensive pieces. Like, obviously, losing Sue changes really the complexion of their defensive identity. But they've got some pass rushers. If Haloti Ngata can kind of not be hurt and not look like he's in his 30s now, then, you know, maybe it won't be as big a drop-off as we were expecting it to be from losing Ndamukong Suh. And, you know, maybe they'll still be a playoff team. Maybe they'll go win 11 games and we'll be back here next year going, what? They won 11 games? Because that is pretty crazy that they won 11 games. And also, look, they were, one really bad penalty away from beating Dallas in the playoffs. And then maybe we'd be having a completely different discussion about them if they had been a team that made it to the divisional playoffs last year instead of losing in that wild card round.
And then we have the 2015 Chicago Bears, which feel, a.k.a. the, okay, let's just run the clock out in the Cutler thing this year. Like, it's finally over after this year. I did a video thing last year where I interviewed a bunch of Bears fans. It was amazing how much they hated Tressman, not because they thought he was like a bad coach. They just really wanted someone. He was too nerdy, too professorial, too, you know, and so on. Like, it feels like they
John
just
Fox is
yeah,
exactly.
He's more their kind of guy. He's more their kind of guy.
Oh yeah, I mean, John Fox is like, let's go have a beer and
right.
Hang out. Yeah, I mean, very very different. Look, I know John Fox very well after he spent 4 years here in Denver, where I live, and nicest guy in the NFL. I mean, if you were taking a popularity poll amongst the coaches, I mean, he'd probably be like, you know, class president or whatever. And his track record, every new head coaching job he's had, he's turned around a team that was really bad and made them pretty good pretty fast. He did it with Denver. He did it with Carolina back in, I guess, 2002. And he did it in Denver with Tim Tebow. So if he was able to get a team with Tim Tebow to the playoffs, maybe they can get one. Maybe they can, you know, make the Bears respectable with Jay Cutler. I'm very interested to see how this offense is going to work. I think the receiver situation they have right now is really not helping. The injuries that Alshon Jeffrey has had, the Kevin White injury is really significant. The fact that he's going to miss at least half the year, if not longer than that, that's a really big deal, because that was a guy that they drafted to, you know, to replace Brandon Marshall as a starter there opposite Alshon Jeffrey. But he was like, he's a really big, fast guy. And I could picture immediately how Adam Gase wanted to use him in this offense. Put him on bubble screens, send him on go routes, move him all over, put him in the slot. All the kind of stuff that we saw the Broncos use with Demaryius Thomas was stuff that I think that they wanted to do with Kevin White. And now he's basically going to be lost for the year. Like, let's say he's able to come back in November, December, but for a rookie wide receiver who had no offseason to come in and play well in December. It's just, it just seems like that's probably a bad decision. Like, let's let this kid get all the way healthy, reset the clock and start over next year. So I think that's a really going to be a really big issue that they have there. And I mean, and the big issue was that their defensive roster was just not very good. Their secondary, they had some issues there. You know, they've got some old players in their front seven still that, so I don't know. I mean, I really respect that coaching staff, especially John Fox and Adam Gase. I thought Vic Fangio, their new defensive coordinator they had from San Francisco, I thought that was a brilliant hire. He's a really, really, really good coach. But I'm just not sure if roster-wise, if they're where they need to be at. And then at what point does Jay Cutler, does that blow up again? Because just given his history, it's going to blow up again at some point. So
that'll be fun. Okay,
it is always fun.
So you've got Green Bay winning the division, I assume. Do you have a wild card coming up?
I do know wild cards. Yeah.
Do know wild cards. Okay. All right, we go to the AFC South, the place that basically you're like, okay, there's Indianapolis, and can they win enough games to get home field advantage in this division? Which really,
yes.
Like, they're in a good position. It feels like more than anyone, they're not only the immediate default pick, but because of their division, it feels like they've got an easy 6-0 almost coming right there.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the division, and I think you know, if any team, maybe Houston is making a jump in terms of like, okay, we can be competitive now with the Colts. I don't think the Jaguars and the Titans are there yet. But yeah, so for the Colts, it's all now about the postseason. All of a sudden, you know, as much different as Andrew Luck is from Peyton Manning, they have built a team around him just like the old Peyton Manning Colts teams, where it's all about kind of their skill position offensive guys. I mean, he was a first-round pick on a kind of a speed wide receiver, a guy whose game is very similar to T.Y. Hilton's, who they ended up re-signing. It wasn't like they knew they were going to lose T.Y. Hilton and they needed a replacement all of a sudden. No, they went out and they just got Andrew Luck, another kind of speedy wide receiver that they can put in the slot, go put outside, all of those kind of things. You know, they signed Andre Johnson, who I think is really, that's going to be a good move. I think he has a lot left. He's going to be pissed off and stuff when he has to play on any of those AFC South games, especially against the Texans. But they still have offensive line issues. They have defensive line issues. They need to have a running game. I've been really high on Frank Gore for a lot of years. Let's see how much he has left. And I think he has stuff left. I think if there's a rare running back that will have a couple good years left after, I think he's 32 now off the top of my head. If there's a guy who can have a good year somewhere else in his early to mid 30s, I think Frank Gore is the guy. He's really smart. I mean, it's by far the most underrated thing about him. So learning a new offense is not going to be an issue for him after spending so many years in one team and going somewhere new. But yeah, I mean, they just haven't. Who's going to get to the quarterback? Is it going to be Robert Mathis after an entire year where he didn't play and he tore his Achilles tendon and he was suspended? Is it going to be Bjorn Warner? Like, probably not. I think he had his chance last year and we just didn't see that out of him. Is it going to be Trent Cole, who had a lot of sacks in his career in Philadelphia? But and those are the questions that I have right now. It's really about those lines. So it's stopping the run for their defense. They didn't do a lot to shore up the interior of their defensive line. They signed Kendall Langford from St. Louis. That was about it. The best part of their defense is Vontae Davis, a one corner. Their safeties have played pretty well. Their inside linebackers have played pretty well. But that front line of the defense is just still a question, as is the offensive line. So, look, I think Andrew Luck's going to put up crazy numbers, but we're at the point with them that if they don't make it to the Super Bowl, I think this year is going to be considered a disappointment for them. Chuck Pagano is going to be on the hot seat. He didn't get a contract extension this offseason, so this is the last year of his contract, which is crazy. I mean, this is a guy who kicked cancer's ass his first year as a coach while the team got better, made the playoffs that year, and has taken a jump each year. He's not the one building this roster that doesn't have isn't reinforcing with offensive and defensive line help. Every guy in the locker room loves him, and yet he's the one whose kind of job status is all of a sudden on the line if they don't make the Super Bowl, which is just crazy. But that said, I think they've got a really, you know, I think they're going to win the division. I don't think it'll be that hard for them to win the division. But then it's all about what do you do in January? What do you do when you have to play the Patriots? I think that's going to be, what, week 5 or week 6 that they play the Patriots?
Let me check that. That is week 6.
Yeah, it was going to be whenever Brady was going to come back.
Right.
So that game, I mean, they played 3 or 4 times since Andrew Luck's arrival. None of those games have been close. The AFC Championship game was not close. So really nothing else matters. To me, when I'm making predictions about the Colts, until I see how do they do when they have to play New England.
All right. Well, for the other teams that barely seem in the – Houston, I guess, less so. The other teams barely seem in the same league as New England. But Houston, certainly, you know, last year it felt like we forget they almost they almost sneaked into the playoffs last year.
Yeah,
this is,
they did.
And
they won 9 games last year?
Yeah, 9 games. But do you feel like that's something they can do again this year, or is it still on the quarterback?
Yeah, I still think it's on the quarterback. I mean, it really comes back down to that. This is another spot where, despite how much I really do enjoy Hard Knocks, the drama of Brian Hoyer versus Ryan Mallett just really didn't do it for me. I think it was a mistake that they have not invested more in that position, that they didn't. I know it's really hard to draft quarterbacks, but last year when you had the number one pick in the draft, you had a high pick in the subsequent rounds after that, when there were some good quarterbacks coming out of that draft last year, or promising quarterbacks at least, that you didn't do more to get a young guy in there to compete, so that you weren't stuck in this position where you're trying to, everything's going to ride on Brian Hoyer or Ryan Mallett. And Brian Hoyer, guy who won the job, I'm no surprise that he won that job. He's a coach's dream. He's really smart. He's good in practice. He's really good when, you know, he knows what he's supposed to do in practice and all of those kind of things. He gets the ball out really quickly. So it's really easy for coaches to like him and pick him to be your starter. The question is, why hasn't he been a successful NFL quarterback really in his career yet? It's just because there's just something else missing. Like, I think we know who he is. Is he going to lead them to 10 wins? And I think it's going to take that, at least that many wins, to become a wild card team in the AFC. And I don't know. I'm not that confident that he all of a sudden is going to have this breakout year this year and be the guy. But that said, I'm always going to watch Texans games every time I get a chance to, because you can't take your eyes off J.J. Watt. You don't know what he's going to do. It gets really boring picking the same guy to be your defensive player of the year, MVP, that kind of stuff. But he is one of those guys. And I will say, I voted for him for MVP last year. I think there was 13 people who did. I was one of them. No offense, Aaron Rodgers. But I just thought that if we're picking the guy who was the best player in football last year, it was J.J. Watt. And the argument that, oh, his team wasn't good enough and he wasn't good enough to get his team to the playoffs. If they had won one more game and made the playoffs when they had one of the worst quarterback situations, that would have all of a sudden swayed it and made J.J. Watt a better MVP candidate. That was just crazy to me. So I can't wait. I'll watch J.J. Watt do anything. You know, act on New Girl, be in, you know, headphones commercials, whatever his deal is, I'll watch any of it.
Pitch Perfect 3, it's coming, you know it.
Oh my God, make that happen. Elizabeth Banks, I hope you're listening.
Oh, she's so right. You know, her husband used to be a sports blogger back in the day. We did an interview with him. He had his own sports blog in like 2004, so we couldn't believe that she'd married such a nerd.
That makes me like her even more.
Oh, she's awesome. She's awesome. Okay, so then we go to Jacksonville. And the thing about Jacksonville that's interesting is that, like, I feel like Gus Bradley's a smart guy, and they've kind of put some good stuff in place, and they're trying, and it feels like they're making these incremental movements, but they just really just still aren't winning anything.
Yeah, that's an issue. I mean, they started from nothing. I mean, that cupboard was so bare when Dave Caldwell got there, and then when they hired Gus Bradley, that I think they're given a little bit more leeway than some other new coaching staffs are given, just because of the amount of work that they had to do. The fact that they had, you know, year two, they go out and draft a quarterback with their first round pick. That buys you a little bit more time, I think, because he obviously is going to need a little bit of time and you got to put the right players around him. But so yeah, it's kind of all about the Blake Bortles year two. He spent his entire offseason kind of retooling some of his mechanics. He went and worked with Tom House, the quarterback's guru, the guy, you know, Tom Brady's guy, to kind of work on his release point. He worked a lot on kind of footwork, getting stronger in his core and lower body. So we'll see how much better he is. There's still been some questions about his offensive line. The players around him, they spent money. The big offensive addition that they made this year was to get Julius Thomas, the tight end from Denver. Unfortunately, he's already hurt. He had a finger injury. He's going to miss a few weeks of the season. So that's not going to help them get off to the type of start that they probably need to get off to, because he's such a good red zone weapon. He's just such a mismatch. You know, they have some other, you know, guys. Mercedes Lewis has been probably a really underrated tight end for a long time. Allen Robinson, second year receiver, is huge. They really like him. So if you get all of those guys playing, I think their offense looks pretty good. But right now, still some significant questions, and definitely some significant questions on defense. I don't know who on their roster can rush the quarterback. I'm just not, I could not give you one name right now of like, this is the guy that's going to be their sack guy. I don't know who that is. It was unfortunate that Dante Fowler tore his ACL, their number one pick. I mean, that's just a really, really brutal, bad luck thing that happened in May. I don't know. And they were really counting on that. He was going to be that guy. And I don't know. And if you can't affect the quarterback and you got questions about your quarterback, I'm not sure how excited we can get about you.
And then Tennessee, poor Ken Whisenhunt, my former Arizona Cardinals coach. At the end, it feels like it's going to be his last year. It's going to always be the quarterback that gets him. Max Hall was the starting quarterback for Arizona for a few years. Mariota, obviously a talented guy, but expecting him to be able to help out a lot of these guys save his job in his rookie year feels like asking way too much.
Yeah, I think I saw Marcus Mariota in the preseason. His first start, I was pleasantly surprised what I saw from him. I think he answered a lot of the kind of the dumb questions that people like me had about him. Like, oh, can he operate a huddle? Like, yes.
Yes, right.
Can he take a snap from under center? Yes.
Yes.
I think we didn't give him enough credit for just the type of overall football player and athlete that he is. I think the biggest issue that Marcus Mariota is going to have is that they're just not that good around him. It's just, that's what happens sometimes to these guys that are drafted number one or number two overall, is they come to a place that's just not really ready to win. They don't have, they've got issues with their offensive line. They've got issues at running back. I'm not sure if anybody's super sold on any of their wide receivers or their tight ends. Dorial Green-Beckham looks the part, their rookie wide receiver, but he's had a lot of off-field issues in his past. He didn't play college football last year because of the stuff that happened to get him kicked out of Missouri. So, you know, I think he's got a pretty steep learning curve, and they also have some questions on defense. I mean, there was a reason that they were ready to take Mariota at pick number two. So I think Mariota will be better than a lot of people are expecting him to be. Maybe people who just assume that he could do nothing but run the Pittsburgh, I don't know where that came, the Oregon offense.
Right.
And the only way that he could work in the NFL was if he played for Chip Kelly. I think we weren't giving enough credit there. That said, I think it could be rough. And I hope for Ken Whisenhunt's sake that the fact that they do have a rookie quarterback will buy him a little bit more time. I hope that's the case. But we'll see.
I hope so. Good. Hopefully it works out for him. He seems like a nice chap. You have Indianapolis winning. Do you have Houston getting a wild card?
I do not.
Do not. Okay. Sorry, J.J. Watt. But now he has it. Now he has January free.
It will not preclude me from voting for you from the MVP if you have another like 20-plus sack season and score a bunch of touchdowns.
He can go out to his secluded cabin that's not really a log cabin and not. But anyway, it doesn't matter. Okay, now we go to the NFC South. We start with Carolina. Every time I look at Carolina, it just looks like last year's team and the year before. It's Newton. Until Newton, like Newton's, I think, an underrated quarterback in a lot of ways, but until he becomes like the superstar, it feels like they're going to be maybe the best team in the division, but that's it.
Yeah, I mean, I think he took a step last year, especially late in the season when he showed what he was made of when he came back from that car accident, when he had kind of the neck vertebrae injury. I think he can do a lot of good things. I think they still have issues at wide receiver. The Kelvin Benjamin injury was a really big deal. I think he was a guy who's really poised to have a really nice breakout kind of sophomore season. And losing him was a big deal because I don't think the receivers were that good last year. And they're definitely worse this year without Kelvin Benjamin. So that's an issue. Their offensive line is still a pretty big question. Michael Orr was kind of their big offseason addition. And there's a reason that he has bounced around now from, I think this is his third team, and that it didn't work for him ultimately in Baltimore. It didn't work last year in Tennessee. So, you know, he's a nice name because everybody loved The Blind Side and Sandra Bullock and everything, and the book as well. But they still have some questions there with their offensive line. Defensively, some nice pieces. Charles Johnson's a good pass rusher. Who's going to rush opposite him? That was a big question all of last year as well after they lost Greg Hardy. Luke Kuechly, I mean, you can't say enough good things about Luke Kuechly. But I don't know. Maybe it's still only going to take 8 or 9 wins to win the NFC South. And if that's all it's going to take, then why not Carolina?
Then we look at Atlanta. This was a team that really felt like they were in good position to win the division last year if we're kind of falling down the stretch. This is also, I think, they have two more years of the Georgia Dome until the thing with the other even weirder roof that they're building. How do you feel about Atlanta and Matt Ryan and kind of do you have the Tevin Coleman excitement that a lot of people have?
I have not yet caught Tevin Coleman fever.
Okay, fair enough.
So that's, I haven't caught that yet.
Yes.
I feel pretty good about this offense. I think, you know, you look at what Kyle Shanahan has done well over his career. I mean, I think we have to kind of take last year in Cleveland out of it. That was just kind of a mess with the quarterback situations that they had and the receiver issues that they had. But I think this offense that Kyle Shanahan likes to run, it works really well for Matt Ryan. And they have some really good pieces there on offense. Julio Jones is a monster. I've never not impressed by what I see out of Julio Jones. He looks even faster this year, which is just crazy. If Roddy White can get healthy and kind of still provide something, even if he's not the Roddy White that he used to be, I think they can have a really good offense. You know, maybe, you know, top five kind of caliber offense. For the Falcons, though, it's all about can they be better on defense. I think they were last in the league in a lot of statistical categories last year. Getting Dan Quinn in there, who's kind of a really energetic, innovative defensive guy, I think that's going to be a big deal. But how good is, like, we keep talking about some of these bottom teams and divisions, like how good is their personnel on defense? You know, they're really expecting Vic Beasley, their first round pick, to be a guy who, even if he doesn't end up starting, he might not be a starting linebacker for them, that he can come in on passing downs, third downs, and just be really effective in that limited role as he learns to be a more complete player. I think that's important. Desmond Trufant, one of their cornerbacks, he's really good. But did I get the right Trufant?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Okay. Yeah, that's my one.
All of a sudden I said that and I was like, wait, there's... Oh, the other ones are Marcus and Isaiah. So
yeah,
yes,
right.
Desmond Trufant. He's really good. And I think he's a guy who in a couple of years will throw him in that mix when we're talking about the best cornerbacks in the league. Outside of those guys, I'm not really sure. I don't know. I think a lot of the rest of the guys in the Falcons defense, William Moore, their safety, I think he's one of the better safeties in the league. But I think just a lot of their guys, they're just guys. Like, I don't know how many other guys on the Falcons defense would be starters elsewhere. But so what I'm interested to see out of that is Dan Quinn comes from a place where in Seattle, they take guys who might not be stars other places. They might not be guys that even would have fit other places. And they make them work. And not just work, but make them really, really good players. And can he bring that? Can he see things in some of these players that they have that I think Adrian Claiborne, like these, you know, is maybe going to be a pass rusher there that we've never really heard of. Maybe he sees something and can bring something out of them that they haven't gotten before and can make them competitive enough that, you know, they can, maybe they're going to have to win games, you know, 35-31 or whatever the case might be, but be good enough that it'll allow them to actually win some of these games that they were losing last year.
Speaking of which, of win games 35-31, there is New Orleans. They could have changed everything other than Drew Brees.
Yeah, I mean, they're a team that's kind of changing their identity right in front of us, right? I mean, the Patriots have done that in recent years to really good success, but I don't know. It's that's some pretty significant changes. I mean, the stars that have left New Orleans over the last couple of years, but that, I mean, I just remember when that trade came across, the Jimmy Graham trade. Yeah. It was just like jaw dropping.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Like, you don't see those kind of trades, like the player for player blockbuster, like holy crap, pick your jaw off the ground kind of trades. I mean, that's huge. It completely changes the complexity of that offense, their downfield game. I mean, who's going to be their red zone threat now? You know, is it Brandon Cooks? Right. Is that the guy? I mean, he couldn't be more of a different player than Jimmy Graham was. Are you all of a sudden going to be a running team? I mean, is Mark Ingram going to be
your centerpiece,
a star player? I mean, that's pretty crazy. I mean, they paid him again. He had a good season last year, but man, I mean, this is a team that has completely changed who they are. While a lot of us, I think maybe we just assume, or we still think like, oh, it's Drew Brees. They're going to pitch it all over. He's going to throw 5,000 yards. Like, I don't know. I don't know if that's going to be them anymore. As well as some, you know, they were pretty bad on defense last year. They needed to make some changes. I don't know how much better they've gotten. They've gotten younger. They've maybe gotten better character wise after losing Junior Gallette, a guy who seemed to have a lot of off field issues and as well as locker room issues. They brought back Dennis Allen to kind of be a. He's not a co-coordinator with Rob Ryan, but he's going to be very involved in every aspect of that defense, especially their secondary. And he's very much like a militaristic, accountability, no-nonsense kind of coach. So maybe it'll be a good kind of odd couple yin-yang thing with Rob Ryan and Dennis Allen, who, you know, Rob Ryan, you know, slobby and crazy hair and probably has like 4 days worth of leftover food in his beard.
Of course.
You know, Dennis Allen, who keeps it like high and tight at all times.
Understood. I don't even have a beard. I still have like food stuck in my just stubble from not even stubble. I'm barely a mammal. Anyway, all right. Hey, we go to Tampa Bay and America's sweetheart, Jameis Winston.
Oh, God.
So I have to say though, I don't know how about this year, but certainly this, if you're looking for a good position, he seems to be in at least a better situation than, say, Marcus Mariota, in that, like, there's, like, some really solid receivers here.
Yeah, they've got good players around him. Mike Evans, obviously. Vincent Jackson is still good. Austin Seferian-Jenkins, the tight end, who didn't really have a good rookie year, but he's huge. I mean, those are really big, good targets. You know, if you're Jameis Winston, you're going to be hanging in that pocket, and you're about to get hit because he is going to get hit. They have some major, major offensive line issues going on there. If you can at least look down and you see, you know, 6'5", 6'6", all those guys, that you're going to feel a little bit better about letting that pass go. And they've got some really nice defensive pieces. Gerald McCoy, Levante David. They've got good pieces there on defense. They should be better than they were last year. They can't really be worse, but the way that they were competitive in games. I saw them during training camp, and Lovie Smith was like, look, he didn't want to make excuses for why they lost games, but they did lose, I think, six of their losses were by 8 points or less, which says like either you were leading games and you lost at the end. That also says you had bad quarterback play a lot of times. So I think the big question that I have, though, is one, going to be that offensive line. Is Jameis Winston even going to survive? They've some big, big issues they got to address there. And then how smart can he play? Is he going to turn over the ball? Is he going to be kind of that gunslinger? They wanted him to do that in training camp and in the preseason. They wanted him to be making the tough throws and they didn't want him to be conservative. But you better be making the right throws and not turning the ball over in the regular season games, because that's going to get you killed and it's going to make you put your defense in a really bad spot. And, you know, that was really the big knock on him in Florida State on the field. We could spend an entire other podcast, and you probably have, about his off the field stuff. But the on the field knock on him was that he takes too many risks. He makes too many bad throws that lead to interceptions and puts his team in a bad spot. So those are the things I'm going to be most interested to watch. And look, week one is going to be awesome, where we have Winston versus Mariota.
Yeah.
Titans Bucks week one. I think that's a fantastic game, just for kind of curiosity's sake, to just look at these guys kind of almost head to head, and then also look at the rest of the team around them and who is in a better position to succeed.
All right, so I really hope, like, I actually kind of like Tampa Bay, and I like Lovie Smith, and I like a lot of the franchise. I hope that I'm rooting against them, I'm not going to lie. Okay, so you look at that division. Who do you pick to win, and is there any wild card?
Yeah, this is one that I'm trying to remember who I picked. I think, I remember early, I think I was just really excited about Dan Quinn, and I think I picked the Falcons, and I may have gone back and changed that and picked the Saints, but I did not pick multiple teams.
Okay.
So I think I have the Saints, okay. And I don't feel good about it.
Well, you should feel good about it. Be happy.
That's all right.
Oh, you mean in general, the pick. I just wanted to know.
The pick.
Yes. And no wild card.
No wild card.
Okay. All right. Now we go to the AFC West and the Denver Broncos. Obviously a team that you know well, an area that you know well. It's weird because it feels like a last stand, except they've got a new coach. It's kind of a curious situation.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like it's a kind of a fresh start for a lot of people, like defensively. I think there's a lot of guys that kind of have a fresh start there, new coaching staff. But it also feels like Peyton Manning is never going to say, this is my last year, I'm going to retire at the end of the season, blah, blah, blah. It definitely feels like, you know, like maybe this is going to be it. Maybe this is their last chance that they have with Peyton. I was at a wedding this weekend, and there were some sports writers there who are non-NFL sports writers, and everybody's kind of like, what do you think of the Broncos? And like, what's the feeling? And I feel like it's gone up and down a lot, where there have been times in the preseason where, you know, all of a sudden kind of the local media has really gotten back on board and they're buying in, they think this is going to be a good team. And then there have been moments where, you know, you watch Peyton in the offense, I don't think they scored a touchdown in the preseason. It was very limited action. They only played, I think, a quarter before the second game, and then they played about a half the week three of the preseason. They didn't score a touchdown. They didn't look very efficient. Peyton Manning was getting sacked and hit. Those were some issues. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, maybe they're going to be in trouble. So this is another team, kind of like what we talked about with Indianapolis, where it really, all that really matters is this a team that can win in the playoffs? There's definitely the expectations that, like, yes, in Denver, this is a team that must win the AFC West, but it's not going to be good enough if they don't, let's say, make it to the AFC Championship game or make it to the Super Bowl, just because those are clearly the expectations that John Elway set, because if it was okay to just make the playoffs, he wouldn't have blown up the coaching staff. John Fox would still be here. Things would have been better between John Fox and John Elway, and they wouldn't have had to blow that up. But it was very clear this year that John Elway said, look, I went and got Peyton Manning here. I've paid Demaryius Thomas. I've paid DeMarcus Ware. Like all of these other, you know, Aqib Talib, all these guys. This is the team that should be making the Super Bowl. And there's no excuse or no reason why they shouldn't. And they kind of, you could tell that Elway felt it was coaching was the reason that they didn't make it there. Where I think there's a lot of Broncos fans who are starting to think like, well, maybe it's Peyton Manning's fault that they haven't won more. So yeah, it's going to be a really, really interesting year here. I think their defense is going to be really good, really, really good. Significantly better than they were last year. I think Von Miller's kind of setting himself up to have a monster year where he could make a run at the sack record. Just the way this defense is built, he's now an outside linebacker in a 3-4. It's going to allow them to be a lot more aggressive with him. And then they also have not just one, but two or three other outside linebackers that they're going to be able to kind of rotate in there. That's going to take some of the pressure off of him. My biggest question about the Broncos right now is, how many times is Peyton going to get hit? not necessarily how many times he's going to get sacked, but how many times is he going to get hit? Because the more you hit him, the worse he is. They've got a rookie left tackle. They've got basically a rookie center. It was a guy who was on the practice squad last year. So the snaps that he makes against Baltimore on Sunday, those will be his first non-preseason snaps of his life. And then they've got kind of a journeyman at right tackle. So the best parts of that offensive line right now are the guards, although one of those guard spots is Evan Mathis, who it will be his first game action with the Broncos when he plays against the Ravens on Sunday. So some big questions. I still think they're the best team in the AFC West, top to bottom, entire roster, quarterback, all of that stuff. I don't feel super confident about saying, like, yes, this is a Super Bowl team. And I think it would be hard to find people, if you go around Denver right now, that would disagree with me and say, like, yes, absolutely, this is a Super Bowl team.
It's funny, 3 or 4 years ago, it looked like everything was getting set up for San Diego. They had, like, all this young talent. A lot of people consider they had the deepest young amount of young talent in the NFL. And they had Rivers, who is generally kind of, I think, underrated quality guy. This feels like the end of something this year. Maybe it's just because there's also that's in my mind, just because it's also they may be going to Los Angeles next year. But
right.
Certainly, this
might actually be the end.
Yeah, it might actually be the end of something. But it feels like a culmination point for them this year.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot at stake right now. I mean, they survived this off season of this tumultuous off season with Philip Rivers. He got the contract. He's going to be the Chargers quarterback no matter where they play next year, whether it's in San Diego or in a parking lot in Los Angeles or wherever they're at. But they've got issues with kind of the face of their defense is Eric Weddle. He's in a contract dispute right now. Antonio Gates is suspended for 4 games for a PED violation. I really liked the Melvin Gordon pick. That was a time where need and best player available. You know, they moved up to get him, but that was a move that really made sense. And they really need him to be special. But yeah, I mean, they play the Broncos really well. They always do. John Pagano, their defensive coordinator, even when Peyton was with the Colts, John Pagano's defenses were really good against Peyton Manning. So that's why, if you want to give some reason that the Chargers could make a run in the AFC West, could maybe push the Broncos, it's the fact that every time they play the Broncos, they've got a really good chance to beat them. In fact, they're actually the only AFC West team that has beaten the Broncos at all since Peyton Manning arrived in 2012. One time, one game, time. The entire division.
That counts.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, that's why you say, okay, maybe they're the team that has the best chance to beat the Broncos. I may amend that when we move on to the next team in our discussion, but unless it's Oakland.
It's not. All right. Well, then we'll
but, you know, I don't know. I mean, Philip Rivers is really good. I think he always gives them a chance. It's another one of the situations where it's like, did they close the gap at all with Denver? Or did Denver regress a little bit closer to them? I'm not sure if that's actually happened yet.
Well, I have to say, you've piqued my interest now. It sounds like you have Kansas City fever.
A little bit red fever,
red
right?
Fever, yes.
Is that a real thing?
It sounds terrifying.
Do I need to get vaccinated?
No, that's totally fake. It's the government's way. You know what? Let's not get into that in the podcast.
Thanks, Jay Cutler. So, yeah, I mean, and here's why I think that the Chiefs could make a run against the Broncos. One, I think they've upgraded their offense. I think Alex Smith has given the Broncos trouble in the past. Jamal Charles is one of the absolute best football players. If we're doing the, like, pound for pound best football players in the NFL, Jamal Charles is fantastic. Jeremy Maclin is such a significant upgrade over Dwayne Bowe that it's not even funny how much of an upgrade that is. Travis Kelce is having a nice, I think he's poised to have kind of a really big year when he is the first time that he's their main tight end. But their defense is going to be good, I think. And if they are to make a jump and improve in the AFC, I think it's going to be because of their defense and because of what Justin Houston can do. And you get Derek Johnson back and Mike DeVito back. They both missed pretty much all. I think they both got hurt in the first game last year. And then whatever uplifting emotional stuff you get from getting Eric Berry back, whether or not he's a guy who can be a full-time starter for you anymore on defense, or he still has to work his way back up to that. Just the fact of what he went through in the offseason, the fact that he spent, you know, December through May getting chemotherapy treatments and now is back playing football and playing well. I mean, I think that's a really, really, really big deal. And maybe some people who weren't necessarily inclined to root for the Chiefs previously might take a little bit of extra interest in their games and what Eric Berry is doing. So Thursday night, week two, Broncos at Chiefs. Arrowhead is crazy. Night games is going to be their home opener. Broncos offensive line is still a little shaky, maybe week two. Maybe Peyton's getting beat up a little bit week one from Elvis Dumervil and Terrell Suggs. That could be a really, really interesting night, a really interesting game early in the season.
It's exciting time to be in Kansas City. Good for them. And then there's Oakland. You know, it's amazing how getting a quarterback that's halfway decent just changes your viewpoint of the franchise. It certainly feels like they think they've got the quarterback. Do you?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to kind of grade that on a curve.
Right, right.
Is this a guy who, let's compare him to his peers. Compare him to Johnny Manziel. Like, yes, he was definitely a better pick. Compare him to Teddy Bridgewater. I think you take Bridgewater right now, but I think there's probably numerous teams who regret not taking Derek Carr when they had a chance to, just because of the type of potential he's shown. Maybe you put better pieces around him. You get him a guy like Amari Cooper, who, did you see that clip where he just, well, obviously you're a Cardinals fan.
Yes.
Worked. Yes. Patrick Peterson.
Yes.
Who, Patrick Peterson is absolutely in the discussion for one of the best cornerbacks in the NFL, and Amari Cooper made him
killed him. Absolutely. Killed
I mean, textbook. I mean, it was amazing, and this is why. Like, all right, this is why he was the best wide receiver in the draft, and this is why everybody said he was pro ready, because absolutely he's pro ready if he can do that to Patrick Peterson. Who, like, granted, Patrick Peterson wasn't game planning for him or anything, but still. So that's interesting, and I think Khalil Mack is going to be a really, really special player, and he's a guy that might not get as much attention as some of these other pass rushers elsewhere in the league, just because he plays in Oakland, and the Raiders might still, it might, like, let's say that if the Raiders win six games, that's improvement, right?
Yeah,
I mean, that's
yeah.
got to be, you
yeah.
got to consider that kind of a good season. So maybe Khalil Mack doesn't get quite the attention, but he's a guy who absolutely could go out there and have 15 sacks, could have 18 sacks. He had a really slow start to his rookie year, but was really, really good late. And I think he's going to kind of play the start of the season like he just got kind of shot out of a cannon, and could change things, because the Raiders really have needed that guy. And especially when you play in this division where the rest of the teams have good quarterbacks. I mean, we're not talking about the Kirk Cousins and company here. I mean, we're talking about Peyton Manning, Phillip Rivers, and Alex Smith, who I'm probably higher on than a lot of people are. But these are three really good quarterbacks, and that you really need to sack them and get pressure on them if you want to give your team a chance to win. And Khalil Mack does that for the Raiders.
Well, I'm most excited to watch some Raiders games this year. It's crazy.
You know, it might be the last time we're getting to see that beautiful Oakland Coliseum.
Yes. Yes.
That version of the Black Hole.
Yes, and the rivers of sewage that pop up. Having the baseball game last year where the rivers of sewage came up. But
it's so disgusting.
Yeah, but you know, and also if you go, you'll probably die. But other than that, I think it's actually a good idea.
Yeah, I've survived. I've like hung out in the parking lot there and have not gotten stabbed ever, so it was cool. I think they talk a lot of game, or they look scary, but in general, like, all the Raiders fans that I've encountered have been like really cool and just really passionate about their team. I wouldn't feel awesome being in the parking lot at like a Raiders Niners game.
Right.
But you know, but in general I think you're okay.
I'm scared of all football fans. I'm a baseball nerd. Like, football fans terrify me anyway. Because I'm also just weak. So, okay, you have Denver winning the division. Do you have Kansas City as a wild card?
I believe I do.
All right. I like that. The fortune favors the bold. Very well done. I'm very happy with that one. We wrap up with the NFC West. My NFC West. We start with Seattle. It's really kind of amazing. If that, you know, I think there's a lot of presumption that, you know, well, Lynch would have, if they've given it to Lynch, they would have obviously got the touchdown and obviously won the Super Bowl and so on and so on and so on. But certainly the thing that kind of still kills you about that play or them not scoring there, imagine if they win that game, they are now 2x Super Bowl chance, probably coming in considered the best team in the league once again. We're talking about legitimately as close as we kind of get to a dynasty right now, certainly putting them in that thing. And now, you know, I still think this is a really great team. I think the favorite to win the division. But it's amazing how close they came to being, to really becoming something that that we haven't actually seen in the NFL for a while.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And yeah, that the dynasty word is one you have to be careful to use. Right. But I remember, I guess it was the morning after the Super Bowl in New York when the Seahawks won, a couple hours before we boarded a plane to go to Sochi.
Yes.
I believe I wrote a story about, like, is this a team that it's been a long time since we've seen, like, an actual NFL dynasty. I mean, we had the Patriots, kind of the early 2000s, that era. But is it, you know, can that actually happen in the NFL anymore? And the Seahawks seem to be in a position where they're built, you know, they're able to do that. I mean, the big question that we had with when you looked at the team that won the Super Bowl for the Seahawks is how long can they keep this group together? Because so many of those guys were cheap. Russell Wilson was not making any money. At that point, Richard Sherman wasn't making any money. Earl Thomas, all of these guys. And at some point, you know, you just start losing those guys. It's the nature of a salary cap sport. You just can't keep all of them. And they managed to keep their quarterback. They kept Richard Sherman. They made Earl Thomas happy. And now we're really, they paid Bobby Wagner this summer. The Cam Chancellor holdout is one of the most intriguing kind of underplayed stories, I think, of the summer. The fact that it's here, we're recording this on Monday night of week one, and Cam Chancellor has still not reported to the Seahawks. Yeah. That is insane. I mean, he's a really good, a really special player, but he is made better and more special because of the place he plays and the players he play or that are around him. And the fact that this didn't get resolved, that they weren't able to come to some sort of like, oh, we'll switch some bonus money around or anything, is just baffling to me, that how close we're getting to a guy actually foregoing game checks. I mean, that just doesn't happen.
Yeah, right.
So that's really, really crazy. Offensively, I mean, if we're going to look at how are they better, are they going to make a run? Adding Jimmy Graham is huge. Yeah. I mean, I don't think you can understate or overstate that, whichever way you say it, enough, because the big issue that the Seahawks offense had last year and the biggest question about them was like, who is your go-to guy? Who is your red zone weapon? Look, we saw that in the Super Bowl when they wanted to throw in the red zone and Ricardo Lockett was your guy. And like, look, Russell Wilson can, you know, pat him on the back and say, I'd go to you ever again. Again, if I'm the same situation, buddy. But look, you need a guy who you can really trust in the red zone. And Jimmy Graham is that kind of guy. They didn't have anybody else who was a mismatch in the red zone, and now they've got him. So that's going to be really, really interesting to see that dynamic, how that's all going to work. So yeah, I mean, I think it's still Seattle's division. I think maybe they're going to have some challenges. I think, but they might be a team that's having challenges because of things like Cam Chancellor holding out. Right. And is there any resentment or weird things that are going on from the way that they lost the Super Bowl and chemistry issues and all of those kind of things that sometimes happen when you've got a locker room full of as many crazy people as the Seahawks have. So, but I still think that they win it. Maybe they make it a little difficult on themselves, but it's going to be a big, big, big challenge, I think, for the Cardinals or the Rams or the Niners to catch up.
Speaking of the buzzsaw that is the Arizona Cardinals, Arizona was not only ahead in that division almost all year, they had like a 3-game lead with 5 weeks to go. Like they had like a huge lead. But, you know, I mean, again, the idea, I was not surprised when Logan Thomas got released, because Ryan Lindley, I've seen some pretty terrible quarterbacking from the Arizona Cardinals in my lifetime. That was the worst I'd ever. It was so bad that I joked on Twitter at the time. They're like, man, Logan Thomas must have like leprosy or something that he's not putting him in right now. And so to see, because the quarterback play obviously could have tanked the whole season down the stretch. If they can keep Carson Palmer healthy, can they have the season they did last year, at least close to it? I know some of the advanced stats, people think that there was a lot of luck involved with them last year. Where do you see Arizona this year?
Yeah, but I think there's luck involved with a lot of stuff. So I'm also not nearly good enough at math to
get
super involved in the advanced stat stuff. But
I understand.
Yes, they absolutely can. And I think the fact that like the Niners seem to have taken a step back also helps them a little bit in that division. Because last year it was such like a hurdle for them when they beat the Niners. It was like, yeah, we beat the Niners. And now it's like, all right, we beat the Niners.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Should be beating the Niners. But it's really, it's all about keeping Carson Palmer healthy and getting him through the whole season. Upgrading around him, protecting him better, having actual semblance of a running game. Even though I was down in Arizona a couple weeks ago and I talked to Carson Palmer Bruce Arians is standing out there doing a press conference and he's talking about how, you know, it was the day that they signed Chris Johnson and he was like, you know, we really need to be balanced offense. We're going to be balanced. We're going to run the ball. And then I'm standing 5 minutes later, I'm standing in the locker room talking to Carson Palmer. We're just standing off to the side and he goes, look, we're not a running team.
Right.
Like, we're not going to run. I mean, he said, we're not going to run the ball 40 times a game, which is an exaggeration.
Right.
Barely any teams. I mean, almost no team is going to run the ball 40 times a game. But look, they might not be a team that runs the ball 20 times a game. Like a 4-yard pass on first down is a good play. So they're going to throw the ball a lot. The pressure is all on Carson Palmer. It's on Larry Fitzgerald and John Brown. I think Carson goes. He told me. I told Larry Fitzgerald that my goal is for him to catch 120 balls this year. All right.
Like, that works.
Sure, that's a good goal to have. So I think that'll be fairly interesting to see. But they still have some offensive line issues. They've got some good pieces on defense there. They wanted to upgrade their defensive line. They already lost Corey Peters, one of the guys that they brought in to kind of help that defensive line. Their coaching staff is fantastic. I think Bruce Arians is always going to put them in a good situation. It's all about Carson and his ACLs and his shoulder and his neck and all of those other body parts that a quarterback needs.
Please be okay. Please be okay. Please be okay. Please be okay. all right. And then now we go to the Rams. Speaking of things that could be the last, it's very strange for me. You talked about your husband being from St. Louis. I am a St. Louis Cardinals fan. I'm not a Rams fan, but certainly, you know, I like the idea of them having an NFL team, but it's a weird thing to root for because the owner seems to want to have them leave. But the city is like, hey, no, we'll pay. On one hand, I'm like, great, good for you. What a jerk the owner is leaving. But also, city, why are you paying? Don't pay for this thing. It's this kind of weird situation. And it all feels to be kind of culminating in a team that, you know, if they had a more stable situation off the field, it looks like a team that, I don't know, maybe have questions about Foles. But, you know, it feels like a team that could maybe take a step forward.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I spent a couple days in St. Louis during training camp, and I left there feeling like, yeah, all right, this is a team that's ready to take on the Seahawks, and they're going to play week one. And so I was like, all right, they're ready. Kind of felt good about what I saw and the people I talked to. They didn't show that in the preseason. I mean, they were one of the ugliest teams, I think, in the preseason, especially offensively. They had some major, major issues going on. So I don't know. Is that just growing pains getting a new quarterback in there? Is the fact that your offensive line is a work in progress would probably be a nice way to put it. They're going to have rookies at left tackle, left guard, a pretty new center. I mean, and then they've got a second-year player at left tackle, and then they've got rookies at right tackle and right guard and a fairly new center. So that's some big issues that you've got going on there. Maybe these players are going to end up being awesome, but that's a lot of youth to be throwing out there for week one, especially for a quarterback who's new into this offense. And potentially you might be playing with a third string running back week one. I mean, Todd Gurley was just cleared for contact in practice week one. So don't have high expectations for Todd Gurley anytime soon, but have very high expectations for him come, let's say, like October, November, that this is a guy that they think can be really, really special and change their offense for the long term. It just might not happen right away. And I think one of the most interesting things, conversations I had during camp, was talking to Jeff Fisher, and he said that right now, the way he looks at the NFC West, it's still Seattle's on top, it's Arizona. He knows that they can be competitive with the Seahawks because they always are when they play in St. Louis. But he said that his goal is that to make the Rams where they can beat the Seahawks conventionally. They can beat them without having to fake a punt in the fourth quarter.
Right.
In your on your side of the field,
right,
where you can beat the Seahawks without having to make a play, do a fake field goal, where you can just line up and beat the Seahawks. And that hasn't happened yet for them. And if they can do that week one, I think they're going to feel a lot better about where they're going, because they've got some really good pieces on defense. Obviously, their front seven, especially their defensive line, is, you know, you can put that up with anybody else's in football and feel pretty good about that. But yeah, some big questions everywhere else, and also kind of facing a very weird year off the field. Their stadium is going to be pretty empty a lot of times, it sounds like. It's just a really dicey situation for the players to be in. What do you say? How do you handle it? Do you think about it? Because it just, unlike San Diego and Oakland, where you have a feeling like they're going to move and you know that's on the table, it just has such a different weight to it in St. Louis than it does everywhere else because of what Kroenke has done.
And we wrap up with San Francisco. It kind of feels like, in a lot of ways, like Kaepernick and Bolden are like the only people left. It feels like it's an entirely different thing going on there. Are they rebooting? Is this going the right direction? Or are they just still kind of in chaos in the wake of Harbaugh?
I don't know. I mean, I'm really looking forward to like the 30 for 30. In like
right.
5 years about the Niners, like January through August of the San Francisco 49ers, from like the moment that it all finally divorced from Harbaugh through, you know, the retirements, the Patrick Willis and the Chris Borland, and then everything that's happened with Alden Smith, and now you've got Ahmad Brooks, he's in legal limbo now. We're, you know, all the Ray McDonald stuff. I mean, any one of those things probably could have completely derailed another franchise. And yet the Niners have gone through all of this,
right,
which is just crazy. You know, I think that they probably are going to take a step back, and they took a step back already last year. I think they're going to have some issues. I think they've got some okay players on defense. They're just all new. We just don't know really anything about these guys. Like, let's say Ahmad Brooks is not able to play much this season. I mean, you're going to go from having Ahmad Brooks and Alden Smith as your pass rusher, your outside linebackers. And I think they had something like, they have 80-something career sacks. I looked this up last week, in the 80s, to having two guys who I think have five,
right,
maybe, career sacks. Where it's not to say that these guys are bad. They just haven't played yet. We just don't know anything about them. But that's like, I mean, that's a big, big question mark. I think the feel-good story and the guy to watch if you want to, like, have something to root for with the Niners is watching Navarro Bowman. The knee injury he had in the NFC Championship game 2 years ago was so horrific and horrible. He missed all of last year, and he's now back and looked like he's going to be really, really good again, back to kind of himself again. Big questions about their offense. Kaepernick, they paid him, but I don't know. Big questions. Their running backs, everything. So I think it could be rough for them. I think it'd be a great story if it's not, but I haven't seen a lot that's given me a ton of optimism for why this is a team that's not going to struggle.
Bottom out. All right. All right, so you have Seattle winning division, and do you have a wild card coming out of here?
I do. Your Arizona Cardinals.
All right. That's pleasant. That would be okay. Two consecutive playoff appearances.
Yeah.
I can handle that. Okay, so now we have to get your Super Bowl prediction. Give me your championship game predictions, and then your Super Bowl prediction.
All right, I don't believe I changed these, so I think this should
okay.
be standard everywhere you could potentially see predictions from me. In the NFC, I have the Packers beating the Seahawks.
Okay.
A game that would be played in Lambeau this year as opposed to Seattle, where Seattle just has like such a great home field advantage there. And then in the AFC, I had the Patriots over the Ravens.
Okay, New England. So a New England Green Bay Super Bowl 50. Did you hear it's the 50th Super Bowl this year?
I did. I actually saw that on the field.
Yeah, I know. Are they going to do that all year?
Numbers.
They're really going to have that gold 50 thing all year, I guess.
They must have bought that paint in bulk from Costco or something.
Yeah, it's got a high pro glow. New England Green Bay, who do you have winning the whole thing?
I have Team Rogers Munn over defeating Brady Bunchen.
All right. Well, I'm that sounds very entertaining and very, very the luminaries coming out for the 50th Super Bowl. Sounds very enjoyable. And in Santa Clara. So, you know.
Which will be lovely.
Yeah, it'll be fun. So, all right, well, Lindsay, thank you for playing around with me for so long. I've had a great time. As usual, I feel smarter after I've talked to you, though that is a low bar for me to clear. but thank you. Thank you for playing around, and we will. I look forward to seeing you at the Super Bowl again this year.
Yes, can't wait. We'll have some beverages.
Please, Minnie. That'd be fantastic. All right, thank you, Lindsay. Stick around. We'll do some trivia. But it won't take too long. But thank you for playing around. Everyone, make sure to follow Lindsay Jones on Twitter. You can follow her at @bylindsayhjones, BYLINDSAYHJONES. And of course, read her work in USA Today and on USA Today's site. She's very good, as you clearly know, having listened to this podcast. This is a Willie's Experience podcast. The music is by the Sundogs. Please rate and review us on iTunes. We'll be back with the trivia version of this podcast and then back with Allison Futter in our weekly chat next week. Have a great day. We'll see you on trivia. Enjoy the NFL, everyone.